Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French. You're listening to a live music clip of the Brett Burleson Band. Music videos are an important marketing tool for any functional musician in today's age, and the production of those videos can vary pretty wildly from band to band. Some are heavily produced, slick, kind of like what you would see on MTV. But a lot of bands opt for a live session, something more organic, to capture the band as they actually perform. NPR has their famous series called Tiny Desk Concerts. And there, you know, they just kind of capture a band performing live, stripped down. There's no bells and whistles. Often it's acoustic. Columbus has a live music video series. It's kind of similar. It's called the Mug and Brush Sessions. The Mug and Brush is a local barbershop on North High Street, and it opens its doors after hours to local musicians for video projects. I'm joined in studio right now by the organizers of this series, Keith Hanlon and Jim Morris. Jim, Keith, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks.
So, Jim, you're the owner of the Mug and Brush. What inspired you to use your space for music video production?
Well, I've just been a music lover my entire life, and I played in a few bands earlier in my adulthood, and it just seems like a natural thing for me to want to utilize the space and give back to the music community.
So you just knew some people, and you're like, hey, this is a cool idea.
Exactly, yeah.
So what are your respective roles in this series?
Jim is the executive producer, I guess.
Oh, fancy.
We've called him that. I'm basically producing, and I'm doing all the audio recording. And so I'm booking the acts that we bring in. We do two sessions a month. Then I found... I didn't find them, but I tapped my good friends who are videographers, Kevin McIntyre, Kevin Sturtevant, Josh Fitzwater, and Craig Wilson and Jason Hambaugh. We're all kind of a rotating cast of videographers, and we've just started putting the series together. I stopped in for a haircut one day, and Jim started talking my ear off a little bit about the idea, and we just made it happen.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. How do you pick your bands? Do you pick them? Do they come to you?
Both. Mm-hmm. When we started this, I think a lot of people didn't really see where we were going with it and how regular it would be. And it's gotten pretty popular. Some of these videos have been getting a lot of good attention. So now we're getting quite a few people approaching us. But from the beginning, I really just wanted to produce an intimate series, intimate video session with a very diverse group of musicians. So that's been what I'm really proud of.
It is pretty diverse. I've seen, I think, all of your videos now, and yeah, cool. It ranges from avant-garde, modern producer stuff to jazz to almost some kind of punk rock kind of stuff.
Sure.
Do you think your proximity to Dick's Den? Dick's Den is a local music, live music venue. You're just right down the block from them. Do you think that has influenced who you like the most?
Who we like the most? I like a lot of the variety. It's certainly convenient to have such a rich resource so close to us, for sure.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, it's a functional barbershop by day, and then you physically have to transform this space to make it into a video production space. What goes into that?
Well, basically moving all the working barber chairs and some benches that the customers sit on. And Keith brings in the sound equipment each and every time, as well as the videographers. And it is a transformation. That's a good way of putting it, because it's, you know, we're conducting business, and then in 20 minutes, it's a studio, you know, so.
That's great.
It's interesting, yeah.
I remember going to a conference once, and they had a video playing and on two different screens, and the point of it was, we're going to play this video, and we want you to tell us which one looks better. And it was the same exact video. One had the music well-produced, the other was just kind of like a camera, a microphone on the camera, and everybody was like, yep, the one that sounds better looks the best. And that's, you know, one of the things that I notice when I listen or when I watch these is just how good they sound.
Great, thanks.
What what are you doing with the sound to make these sound so good? Because when I watch the videos, I don't see microphone. I mean, I don't see stuff everywhere.
Well, it's not everywhere, yeah. There's a lot that goes into it. I mean, on a smaller scale, we have had Jerry David Zasicka from the Black Swans do an acoustic thing. And when we, with that one, we just have a couple mics up. But for a full band, I have PA monitors. We're running lines, vocal lines into the PA and into my recording devices. So do multi-track audio. We both the video and the audio, there's a lot of post-production work. The session may last 2 hours on an evening at the barbershop, but then we put a lot of work into it afterwards.
I'm talking with Keith Hanlon and Jim Morris about the Mug and Brush Sessions. It's a music video series based here in Columbus, and I want to play a clip from one of your recent videos. This sound clip features the Wet Darlings, a Columbus band, and Josh Krajic, who has also been featured here on All Sides, and the song is called Stay.
Makes me feel like I can't live without it. It takes me all the way. I want you to stay.
That was local musician Josh Krajic and a local band, the Wet Darlings, duetting on one of the Mug and Brush Sessions. It's a pretty unique arrangement, but that was a Rihanna cover.
Yeah. We had no idea they were going to do that either. And I was just like, wait, what song is this?
Right.
Oh, okay.
So covers, originals.
That did sound awesome.
Yeah, we've had, you know, mainly originals, but there's been a few covers here. Bird Shack was on and did a great cover of Hank Williams' Your Cheatin' Heart.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
So you said it takes you a couple hours to shoot a video. What is post-production for a video shoot like this?
I can't really speak too much to the video aspect. It's, you know, we have four cameras, and so syncing all the cameras in software and then picking your shots, I think there's a little more artistry that goes into it. I'm not a videographer, so I can't really comment too much on that. Audio production, there's, you know, quite a bit. There's, you know, the EQ and compression for every mic, you know, putting the mix together, bringing in the ambient sounds at the beginning and the end of the video. To kind of give the whole thing a nice natural flow.
So since this is live, performed live, mm-hmm. How many takes do the bands do? And also, how many songs do they do per session?
They usually each get two songs.
Two.
And some bands have done it in one take, and some have been four or five takes. It's just what the band or the crew feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You know, to get it right. So, yeah, when they feel comfortable, it's good. It's just like, it goes back to what you were just talking about. I call it the magic. I mean, the how Keith captures the sound on a limited or ambient amount of mics, the mic placement or whatever he does is magic, you know, so...
Well, I'd say it also speaks to the caliber of the musicians that we have in. It takes a great sounding band will sound great, you know, when you record them, and that's what I love about the session is, you know, there's no going back and fixing small little mistakes. You kind of have to live with it, but a lot of people are just, I mean, they're great musicians in town, and I just love that whole performance feel. Some of my favorite records are, you know, Bob Dylan live in the studio, the bass player messes up, but that's the take, you know, because there was the beauty and the power in that take. So,
well, plus having the video along, that is a little more forgiving too. Mm-hmm. When you're watching the video playback, you don't hear the mistakes so much because it's just so cool to see the video.
Yeah. Oh, there's very few mistakes. I mean, honestly,
Bird Shack isn't in there missing notes.
No. Not at all. I don't think they've ever missed a note.
So, Jim, you mentioned when everybody's feeling comfortable. Let's talk about physically the space. Mm-hmm. You know, when I watch the videos, it looks pretty tight in there. I mean, are the bands bringing...
It's a small shop. It's a small space. The videographers do an awesome job of making it... it is, like as Keith said, it's an intimate space. how should I say? I think they are surprised at the sound that they get out of it because it's a small space horizontally, but vertically there's head space. You know, the ceiling is 12 and a half feet high. So I think that allows, they seem to like the sound that they get in the room.
And hardwood floors, I'm sure, sound good too.
Tin ceiling. So
one other thing is I also noticed on your website that each of these sessions is sponsored locally. I saw Four Strings Brewery, Nick's Comics, Natalie's Coal Fired Pizza. All these different companies are involved.
It's great to have them.
How important is the community in this project?
Well, it's very important. That's, fortunately, one of our videographers, Craig Wilson, knew the owner of Four Strings, Dan, and he kind of hooked that sponsorship up. And again, it's all 2 degrees of separation with, one person knows another. And that's how Natalie's came on board. And I cut Ken's hair from Nick. So it's mostly, again, people that we know or a friend knows. We're always and still looking for new local sponsors as well. Yeah.
Outside of business sponsors, how else is this funded?
Well, the Mug and Brush kind of is the main funding source right now.
And are you making money off of this?
No. No, it's more of a project of passion, as Keith calls it. It's like, I pay for some of the bills and obviously it's secondarily advertising for the shop. It brings notice to the shop. So.
But it's a great...
It's a business expense. And I could be doing other forms and have done other forms of advertising, but this, I feel, is actually creating some art
advertising
and giving back to the community. Yeah. So it's more of a creative, radical marketing, I guess, than straightforward advertising or something,
And with more local businesses helping other local businesses, it just adds to a good community. So one thing I was wondering about is, technology changes and, records and CDs and DVDs are probably always going to be here to some degree or another, but with everything available on demand online live right now, I'm noticing that everything you're putting out is online. I mean, you guys are really embracing that. How is that? Is that something that you're consciously trying to take advantage of?
Absolutely. Yeah. I read the other day that the majority of people 18 years or younger listen to music on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's a growing area for music exposure. I think. If you're a musician and you're not doing some form of video, whether it's something super creative or a straight up more of like an MTV music video, if you're not doing that, you're kind of missing out, I think, in some ways. Even if you just threw a picture around there with your song, getting it on YouTube is pretty important, I think.
Right on. Any plans to maybe ever release a DVD of some of these?
We've spoken about it. We want to get a few more under our belt to do a full album, and we've even talking about having the bands do a Christmas song each time, maybe do a Christmas album in the future as well. I would like to say too that address what you were talking about with the social media. Our videographers are that's part of what they do as well. They're videographers, and then they have a social media and branding company. So they're very knowledgeable in that realm. So
it seems like all your pieces just kind of naturally fell into place for this project.
Yeah. We were really lucky because those guys have forward marketing, and they've been doing this for a long time. So we really were able to, really get on with Twitter and Facebook going into Instagram now. So it's helping us reach a lot of different people.
So long term, what are the goals here?
Keep it going as long as we can.
Yeah.
I like that. We're definitely, we're booked up through the next couple few months, and we have a list of interested bands that can take us through this calendar year into next. So yeah, we're going to try to keep going as long as we can, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very cool. This is All Sides Weekend with Eric French, and I want to thank my guests, Jim Morris and Keith Hamlin of the Mug and Brush Sessions, for being here today. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, man. And like we said before, you got to come out and check a session out.
Oh, absolutely. Well, let's take it out with another clip from a Mug and Brush video. This is the band Fever Fever and their song Blue. You're listening to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French. We'll be right back.
I wanted you to know I loved you. I see beauty in you, even when you're down in shades of blue. Oh, I see beauty in you, even when you're down in shades.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and today we're talking about music video production. You've just been listening to Angela Purley and the Howling Moons. They've been featured here on All Sides, but they're also featured in a video that's produced by Vital Filmworks. That's a production house here in Columbus. And joining us in studio are Jason Clayton and John Doherty from Vital Filmworks. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Hey. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So when it comes to creating a music video for an artist, where do you start the process?
Well, I mean, it's you really have to be able to talk and get to know the artist obviously very well and know the song. So it's a good collaboration between the artist and the production company director. In this particular case with Hurricane, Angela had a lot of really good ideas that she wanted to bring to the table. So kind of messaging points or directions that she wanted to bring or include into the video. So it's a collaboration for sure.
So people bring ideas to you, but how much of this do you script out yourself? Do you write all this out?
It all depends. For Hurricane, it was pretty planned out. That we've done a few where a couple of years ago, what was it, the train wreck video. Kyle Gass from Tenacious D, they called us on a Tuesday or something and said, can you come out to LA and shoot this music video over the weekend? And we had no plan, no idea what it was going to be about. So we just kind of sketched out the ideas on the plane on the way out and shot over a few days. But that was just completely fly by the seat of our pants. But Hurricane was planned out pretty well, and Jason directed that one too. So it was a good one.
It was good. I mean, we... she had ideas like, I want to have people on stilts, circus acting people. I want to shoot in a gas station.
Fire.
I want fire. I want to shoot in an alley. I mean, she had these kind of conceptual ideas, and then we really had to kind of put a little bit of the story together. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's just, when you get involved in the time, the location, the people and all that stuff, it just kind of comes together. Sometimes it doesn't. It's just a lot of it's just, hey, how does it feel? I mean, when we shot that particular video, it was freezing outside. And if you've seen the video, they were wearing pretty short skirts, and so the dancers, and so they were really pretty cold.
Wow. I think this is kind of a testament to the quality of your productions, but I don't see physical themes. I see she's shooting with classic cars at a gas station, and then the receiver video is just so different. Everything is so unique in and of itself, but still at a really, really high level of quality. I mean, this doesn't strike me as a DIY kind of endeavor.
No, it's really not. We, you know, we definitely go out of our way to make things look good, and we work with the right people. And as Jason said, it's a lot of collaboration with great shooters, and the editors that we have on staff are great, and we give them pretty free rein to craft it out and edit it the way they think it should be done. And again, on Hurricane, Angela had a lot of input on the editing, and she gave her feedback quite a bit too. So we try to do the best we can with every video we do.
I noticed on your website you describe yourselves as a community-minded collective. How important is that Columbus, specifically the Columbus community, to what you do?
It's pretty big. I mean, we're really, we're obviously big fans of Columbus, and we really pride ourselves on not only shooting, you know, music videos and things like that from Columbus, but we also do quite a decent amount of work in the public and private sector, and really telling Columbus's story. So, you know, we love the city, and the city's been good to us. So, you know, we really try to go out of our way to tell that story. If it's through music, which we love to do, awesome. If it's through storytelling, we do that as well.
So Vital, correct me if I'm wrong here, but Vital began as Vital Filmworks and then has kind of grown into a lot of other areas. How do all of those areas fit together?
Well, it's me and Jason and Fred Blitzer, our other business partner. We kind of just had this idea, crazy idea, 6 years, 7 years ago, mm-hmm. of just building out a space where we could collaborate with artists. And we're all musicians by, you know, history is, music is all part of us. Jason's a singer-songwriter. Fred plays bass and guitar. And I was a DJ years ago. And so music's always been a big part of our souls, I guess. And we just wanted to start a collaboration of video filmmakers and musicians, and some place where people could really come together and hone their craft and make a mark here in Columbus for music and video and film.
Very cool. Yeah, it looks like that area on Holly Avenue is kind of exploding creatively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're talking here with Jason Clayton and John Doherty of Vital Filmworks. And guys, I noticed that you also have made a documentary for OAR, a Columbus band, and they've gained a lot of national success for themselves. How is making a documentary different than making a video, a music video?
The documentary, it was tough work for sure. I think what we did was we went along with them on tour the last three or four dates of their tour 2 summers ago, I think it was. And we basically just shot everything we could. We had this basic idea. Mark Roberge, the lead singer, had this idea of trying to figure out why seeing a band in the summer is so much fun, and what that really means to both the band and the audience members. So we had that basic idea of what he wanted to capture. So we would just go out and capture as much as we could. We'd go out in the parking lots before the shows and do interviews and just follow them around for 4 or 5 days and didn't get a lot of sleep.
Yeah, and they also shot a lot of themselves, too, while they were on the road. Yep. So there were a lot of cool behind-the-scenes shots as well.
Well, we have a clip from that, from the trailer. It's called Standing on the Burning Hot Sun. This is OAR.
This is it. This is what summer means to us. It's been over a decade of touring and we still can't define it in words. But this is it. It took thousands of miles and hundreds of hours to get to the last night of summer. And the whole time I was trying to put a label on it, catch it in a bottle like a firefly. But when we get here, to this kind of night, I realize it's not just one thing that makes summer concerts a timeless adventure. It's everything.
So you take the left, I take the right, under us, we're undefined. Oh, 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 I wanna go to heaven.
That was a clip from Standing on the Burning Hot Sun. It's a video project, a documentary produced by Vital Filmworks. So we at WSU, we've been doing some documentaries about the Columbus Neighborhood series, mm-hmm. and even though I'm not directly involved with the production of those videos, I have seen the hours that go into it and the amount of shooting and how much post-production work. Do you guys have any idea how much time has gone into a documentary?
Depends on how long the documentary is, obviously. But It's hundreds of hours. I mean, obviously, if it's well thought out and there's a really pretty good pre-production side of things, it makes the post-production a lot easier, obviously. But I mean, a lot of the stuff when you're doing a documentary, it's very much kind of touch and go, shoot as you see. You know, it's very real in the moment, so you don't really know what you are going to get unless it's really specific and you're going in to interview people. But a lot of it's just like real life, so it does tend to really bring the project a lot longer if you, yeah. You know, because it's a documentary from that standpoint.
So in addition to video production, you're also a record label and, you know, you've got some bands you work with. Who are you currently working with?
Well, right now, obviously, we just released Angela Pearlie's new record. Some of the most recent stuff that we've done, we did the Music Loves Ohio kind of compilation CD that was awesome. It was featured the Floorwalkers, the Regrets, Jared Mahone, Post Coma Network was on it. There was a bunch of local musicians that came together and covered their favorite kind of Christmas tunes, and then they sold that for they did a performance, and the CDs, all the proceeds went to Music Loves Ohio. And that particular nonprofit gives stipends or grants to schools throughout the state of Ohio for their music programs. So it was a really cool kind of thing. But Dan White Sextet, we just did a record for Jared Mahone, who's a really phenomenal singer-songwriter. Post Coma Network, Evan Oberle Project, Hey Hercules, Erica Hughes, Morgan Trenny. So a lot of different people. You know, in our building, it's kind of really cool because we have some really key talented people in there. So it's not just us there. We have two other people in our building that are also very music related and really have put their mark in the music business.
So can a band that wants to make a video just call you up? Or are you more selective of your time?
Yeah, I mean, time is limited, yeah. As with everybody. So... you know, if it's the right project, sure, we'll listen, but it's yeah. Tough. We are pretty tapped out as far as time goes. So
one thing I noticed on your website, it looks like in addition to the Christmas project, it looks like you're pretty active in the community charitably. What else do you have going on?
We do a lot of nonprofit work. We do stuff for Dress for Success, Komen Columbus, who are some of the other ones? United Way. So we are pretty community focused, and Jason and I sit on a number of boards throughout the community, and we definitely, like Jason said, community's been good to us, so we definitely want to give back.
Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Any big projects coming up?
I'm sure. Well, promoting Angela's album.
Yeah,
we have her new video for
Athens
comes out next
single
next week.
Yeah, it's being released. Has its like its own release on a pretty well known website. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's a blog spot that's really into the kind of crossover country stuff.
And this video is really good. It takes a little different take on her band, and it's more focused on her. They shot it down in Athens, hence it's the name. So it's really good. We're excited to get it out, and Carrie Henderson and Justin Gassman in our office did a really good job on that video with some really good graphics and shooting work.
Well, guys, I want to thank you for coming in. Everything I've seen or heard come out of Vital has been awesome. Great. So many of our guests that we've had on this show, the first thing I think is, oh, wow, the production is amazing. And as soon as I ask where it was done, almost everyone has been like, yeah, we're connected with Vital in some way.
Great.
This is All Sides Weekend with Eric French, and I want to thank my guests, Jason Clayton and John Doherty, of Vital for being here, and I'd like to play us out with a track. I've been a fan of The Receiver for a long time, so when I saw the video, I loved it. So let's go out with a track by The Receiver. It's called Visitor. This is All Sides Weekend. We'll be right back.
Oh,
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and we're listening to the song, at least today, that's from a Columbus band called The Wiles. Once a month here on All Sides, we do our local music show and try to have a musician spotlight. And this month, we have local musician Joe Peppercorn in studio. Joe is he's a member of the bands The Wiles and Watershed. He's the creator of The Beatles Marathon, which I'd like to talk about here in a little bit. And he's just an all-around Columbus music mainstay. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hi, thank you very much, Eric. Appreciate it.
So I moved here in 98, and shortly thereafter, I started noticing The Wiles and seeing shows. Tell me about the history of The Wiles.
We all kind of went to school together. We were teenagers. We started playing music together. And we all went off to college, but in the summer times, various configurations of us would play together. And then when we all graduated from college, we really gave it a go, and we had a lot of great things happen, and then it kind of fizzled out. But, we still have a lot of passion for playing. Playing together is a lot of fun, so we continue to make records and play, you know, and it's just fun. And it's making art, you know, making life worthwhile and all.
Yeah. Aesthetically, you know, I hear some Beatles, Graham Parsons, whatever. How do you describe the sound?
It's pretty straightforward. Melody driven and lyric driven and song driven. I don't know. Folk pop or something like that. I don't know. I've always stumbled trying to describe our music, but, after 15 years, I still struggle with that. But.
Yeah. I've been listening to The Wiles all week on Bandcamp, which is great that you have so much stuff up there. And yeah, it's kind of hard to describe because it's, on the one hand, it's upbeat and energetic, yet still kind of relaxed and chilled a bit. I don't know. It's just, it's great music to just kind of listen to, dig into the lyrics and just kind of, I don't know. I just think it's fun rock pop.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, we spend a lot of time crafting, even though, you know, probably 50 people will hear it or whatever, you know, hopefully more now that I'm on here, but, I just take a great pleasure, and it gives me a lot of meaning in my life to spend a long time crafting songs, to craft lyrics. I was watching my kids this morning. I have three, and I take care of them during the day and work at night, and I was working on my lyrics this morning. It just kind of gives it some sanity and some continuity to my life that, you know, I can't really find in a lot of other places.
So, in addition to, The Wiles, you've also been playing with Watershed.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that you also do some solo projects, and I had seen it reported on. However, I've never actually been to the Beatles Marathon, so in preparation for this interview, I started to dig into to what the Beatles Marathon is, and it's pretty impressive. Tell us about that.
Me and a bunch of pretty much everybody who plays in the Wiles now, and some other musicians from bands in town, all local creative musicians, we get together and we, once a year... so far, it's always been the week between Christmas and New Year. We play every Beatles song. So there's like 210, something like that. The number changes every time I count. I've never really gotten an exact count on how many songs we play. But it's around 210 songs. It's a 12-hour show. And it's this. We've done it four times. It's been a blast. And I think we're planning on doing it next year. But yeah, it's 12 hours of Beatles songs, every single one.
I can only imagine the amount of prep time. I don't know that I've ever even learned 200 songs in my life, let alone to play them in one concert.
It's a lot of prep. I mean, it gets easier as the years go on, but then, you know, we become more meticulous about the details, make sure we get all the harmonies and things like that. So it's a continuing art project kind of where every year, you know, these new details get added or we change things up. It's kind of cool because, you know, it feels like we're making art, even though we're just playing someone else's songs, because it's kind of, there's this performance art aspect to it where, like, look at the freak show of us playing doing this really crazy task. But then, you know, it also is just, you know, you set this thing going and you see what happens. And I think a lot of the performance is the way people react and interact with us when we do it. And it's something really special. I don't know. We had, you know, 1,000 people there this last time at the Bluestone, and everybody was reacting very emotionally, and it, you know, I was getting very emotional, and my children could be there, and I don't know, it's something special. I'm really, really, lucky to have stumbled into it. And
the Beatles have that hold on people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's in, you said, December, assuming it happens this next year, I'd like to have you on here before. And actually, I was thinking it would be cool to do an interview with you before and then maybe like the morning after the concert to see how your voice
talk
is shredded.
The day after the concert. I can't. This last year, I couldn't move my neck, wrist, or talk for a day. And my voice came back in a week, but it's.
You get some like a treadmill or something and train for it.
Yeah, I do that. Run. We have a treadmill, and I run and sing as loud as I can. Or if the weather permits it, I run through Grandview and scream at the top of my lungs the Beatles songs so that I strengthen my voice. But
we have a clip from the Beatles marathon. Let's take a listen. That is a clip from the Beatles Marathon, the Beatles song, I Feel Fine. I'd imagine there's a lot of wooing and high-fiving at the beginning of every song.
Oh, yeah. Everyone tries to figure out the way we do the order. We try to do it in chronological order, but, you know, there's certain songs when people recognize parts, they, you know, you can tell the songs that really have a hold on people. It's pretty cool.
This is All Sides Weekend with Eric French, and I'm talking with musician Joe Peppercorn. He's a member of some Columbus bands, The Wilds, Watershed. He's the founder of the quote-unquote Insane Beatles Marathon. Joe, I've also heard, kind of through social media, that you've had the opportunity to work with steel guitarist Al Perkins lately. Mm-hmm. He's well-known for work with all kinds of stuff. He was on Exile on Main Street, Graham Parsons, Bob Dylan. How did that collaboration come up?
A good friend of mine, he's also my boss. I work for him over at Little Rock Bar in Italian Village. Quinn Fallon, he's a great musician and songwriter. He hired Al to do some lap steel on pedal steel on some of his tracks. And he got a rough mix of one of our songs, and kind of as a nice surprise, there was some time at the end of the session, and he said, "Hey, Al, will you play on this song?" So we have this track that will be on our next record with Al Perkins playing pedal steel. And he did say he liked it and he would be willing to do more. So I don't know, maybe he'll join the band. But
that'd be awesome. That's a pretty awesome gift to receive too.
Oh man, it was out of this world, because I mean those Graham Parsons records that Al Perkins played pedal steel all over, that's, you know, one of those sounds that I've always just, those unattainable things I've always pursued, you know, since I was 18 and first heard him. Like, oh man, I would love to sound like that. And then to hear that, and you know, when he plays on our song, it sounds just like it. And I was just, I started tearing up. I was just, oh my gosh, this is out of this world. And, you know, little moments like that are what, you know, what you go for, because you know you're not going to be famous. You know you're not going to get rich. I mean, you know, when you have kids like I do, you're not going to make a living off of this. You can't tour. You can't do those things. So it's those moments like that where you're like, oh, yeah, that's why I do this, you know, where, you know, you can create something, be a part of something that's a little bit bigger than you. And I mean, that was one of those moments out of this world. It was really great.
Great. So you mentioned, you know, your life has changed and the band doesn't play out as much, but it looks like you're still pretty prolific writing and recording.
Yeah, I try to be. We have like 16, 17 songs we've got nearly done for a record, and I was working this morning on songs for another one. And we were playing a couple shows in the spring, summer, and I try to play as much as I can on my own. And I mean, I'm a church organist, so I play 3 masses a week, which, you know, keeps my mind focused on music in a certain way. And
you're a church organist?
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about that for a second. Yeah, that's not something that I've ever heard anybody in here say.
It's not something a lot of people do, which is kind of nice in the job market for it. But I've been very fortunate. I play at 2 great churches, St. Margaret of Cortona on Hague and Christ Church over in the Short North area. Some great people. They really appreciate the music. It's a great feeling to play and have people come up and say, "Hey, I really liked what you did." And whether it's, you know, me playing a Bach prelude or me butchering a Beatles song after 8 hours.
Did you study that? I mean, isn't that the kind of thing you have to go to conservatory for?
Yeah, I mean, my introduction to music was starting piano lessons, and I kind of was on and off with it. And then in high school, I Had a friend that got me going on the church organ, and I kind of fought against it. But then when I was 20, I kind of stumbled into a job, and it kind of forced me to learn real fast how to sight read and how to play, you know, learn a bunch of music really fast. I mean, it's what contributed probably to me wanting to do the Beatles marathon, because I was used to, you know, every week, here's 10 things you got to play, and you only know two of them, and in half an hour you got to get it all ready. And so, like, when I first did the Beatles thing, it was like, okay, got to get 210 songs ready in 2 weeks. I can do this because I know like 50 of them, and I can kind of BS my way through 100 of them. You know, now it's, we know all of them, but the first year was like, it was kind of the same approach that I take the church organ. Not that I BS songs ever, but you know, some mornings you come in, you're like, oh boy, I got to simplify this to get through this. But yeah, play Saturdays and Sunday mornings.
So let's also talk a little bit more about your work. You're a bartender. You mentioned that you bartend at Little Rock, mm-hmm. and you were a longtime bartender at the Tree Bar. What does bartending add to your songwriting? I mean, do you get a lot of good people watching, observing going
you
on?
You do. I think it adds a certain humility. You get to know that, you know, you're pretty much the same as everyone else. I think when you meet, you have to deal with so many strangers, and you get into these moments where you're talking with them a lot more intimately than you would if, you know, you were, you know, I don't know, selling them insurance, or maybe if you talk to them intimately, selling insurance too. But I know that I get this intimate knowledge of people, and I find out a lot of people are a lot like me, and you know, a lot of my stories and or self-pitying might not be that as special as I once thought it was. So and there's a few songs I've written now that are, you know, kind of loosely based on people, but I still have not committed what I think is a terrible sin of writing a bar song. I don't want to do that, you know. Oh, it's 10 o'clock at the bar, and like with the piano man, Billy Joel. I hate that so much. I never want to do that. Like, without, you know, the microphone smells like a beer. A microphone never smells like a beer. That is the greatest smelling microphone in the world,
yeah.
By the way.
I've smelled some nasty microphones.
I would love it if my microphone smelled. This microphone here actually is one of the better smelling ones I've ever had, too. So
yeah, it's nice stuff here. So I also noticed on your website, in addition to having links to your musical projects, you have something on there called Drinker's Peace. Could you tell us about that?
Oh, man. I am into cocktails, and so I started a blog that I did not keep up with very well. But I started a blog writing cocktail recipes and stuff like that, or about certain cocktails. I had the fortune of working at Curio at Harvest for about a year and a half, which is a really great cocktail bar. So I got a really intimate knowledge of how to make really good drinks. And so I started a blog, but it's kind of sad because you can see where I kind of lost interest. It's like getting a copy of like Plato Republic, and the first 10 pages are highlighted, you know, like that's my cocktail blog.
It sounds like an Onion article.
Yeah.
So what are you excited about coming up? I mean, what do you got in the works?
Man, I'm doing this great event tomorrow, called Music in the Round. This, great young lady in town, Erin Corrigan, throws this thing together, and I'm playing with three other great Columbus songwriters. It's at Via Vecchia tomorrow at 6:00. It's nice because it's an earlier show. And then the Wilds are playing March 28th at the Treehouse for Ghost Shirt album release party. So
cool. Speaking of the Wilds, I pulled one of your new cuts. Yeah, like I said, I keep up on your Bandcamp, and as you know, new songs come up, I
Thank
obsess
you.
Over them. So we have a cut from a track called Louise. Let's hear that.
Louise, bring me my guitar, strap bells to the soles of your shoes, so I can hear it when you walk away, and you can hear me sing my blues. There's a white flag in my guts, waving in the wind of your breath. You wrap your smile around.
That is a new track by The Wilds. It's called Louise. I understand that's one of the ones that Al Perkins played on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear that. So in The Wilds, what do you play? I didn't hear a piano in there.
There is a piano. It's mixed very low in there. But I mostly play guitar, and that's, if there were pianos in clubs, I would probably play the piano all the time. But I have I don't know. I don't have the medical insurance deductible to really haul around a piano to every gig. I mean,
you don't want to be hauling a piano down to, say, like Bernie's Distillery?
No, I don't want to be doing that. Out of ease, I mostly play guitar, but I still love playing. I play the organ every week and I love playing piano, and I do it a lot on the Beatles show too. Live, I try to stick with the guitar, but I sing. We do a lot of vocal harmonies. I love harmonizing. That's one of the things I love doing in the Beatles show too, is the all the harmonies.
The Beatles show, how many, so you said it's the Wows, but how many other people do you have rotating in and out?
We're at like 10 or 11 people. We have Sam Kim from the band Ghost Shirt. We have Jesse Cooper from the band Receiver. We have Tommy Young from a band called Low Men. We have a gentleman named Nate Rothaker, who does an excellent job. He's played in a lot of different bands. He moved in from L.A. And and then we've got Mr. Phil Cogley from the Saturday Giant. It's a great group of local musicians. It's all creative musicians. You know, people play in bands, and then once a year they're all on board to kind of wreck their lives for a few weeks to get this thing together.
Do you have to rehearse a lot for this?
Yeah, it's about 2 months, and you know, leading up to it, it's a lot of preparation every year. Even though by now everybody knows the songs, you know, just, you know, because the first 3 years you'd be going through and you'd hit a song, you know, in a 12-hour show you'd hit a song, you'd be like, oh man, we didn't practice this one, so here we go. And you know, there were definitely some disasters. We had no outright disaster songs this year, which was the first year where it was like, okay. This was actually somewhat listenable the whole way through.
Do you record those concerts?
Other people do, and which is cool. Like, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube, and you know, it's I don't know. I have a hard time going back because I'm like, oh man. Like, even with the bit you played, I'm like, oh man, I sound so out of tune.
Yeah, sometimes those fun projects are good to just let bask in. The warm memory of,
and the memory of how in tune I was, and yeah.
But and it's so hard when you hear, especially YouTube videos back, because it kind of it loses the wall of sound and the energy of the moment.
Yeah, it does. But it's still great. Like, I mean, I was actually somewhat relieved with what you played. I was like, okay, that sound, my voice isn't too bad there. But like, you know, and also like, you have to go into that show with this ridiculous level of confidence, which you have to do when you write songs anyway, where you have to be like, oh, I have something to say, or, you know, you have to kind of boost your ego to a point where, you know, you probably shouldn't. And, you know, and then there's the big come down afterward where, you know, I come home and my kids don't care what, you know, they're just like, you know, feed me bananas and apples, and, you know, which is good. It's like the ebb and flow. You know, I feel like, oh wow, I really did something, and then nah, I didn't, try again next time. And that's the, I don't know.
You're like, I just worked for 2 months on this.
I just worked for 2 months. You know, it's fun getting that. The kids is one of the reasons I started doing it. It's really fun with them because now they know all these songs because they hear me playing them all the time. And they sing along with me sometimes. Sometimes they tell me, no, I don't like that song, don't play it. And I don't know.
We've got the next, you've got the next generation of band members coming up now.
Hopefully. I don't know if I would tell them to do music, though. I mean, but we'll see. If they'll either pick it, they'll either see me playing and pick it up, or they won't. We'll see.
Well, that's great. You've been listening to All Sides Weekend with Eric French, and I'd like to thank my guest, Joe Peppercorn, for joining us today. Joe, this was fun. I learned a lot. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much, Eric. I really appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. I want to thank Emmy Beach for producing this program, and I'd also like to thank Ann Fisher, Amy Jurevich, and the whole All Sides crew for helping out. We do this show once a month, and stay with us. We'll be back in about a month. She destroys you. Half-sunken eyes, bubbles in your parachute.